Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy. Recording is 12:56 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 8th, and we had a lot of activity in stock markets today, but I thought I would kick off first with the euro-dollar level, because it did pull back rather sharply from the 114 area on Friday, which also marked an important peak from back in March. So it was steady in here today. We may just see some consolidation in the region of the previous peak. I think the most important thing that we're seeing is that there is increasing evidence of a medium-term peak for the US dollar. The euro had traded lower for over 2 years and had trended in a very consistent manner and had encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean on repeated occasions. Well, that ended in February. It wasn't quite able to hold the move. Now it's been up in a more robust manner over the last 2 weeks. So far, it has held the move, and really a sustained move below 110 would be required to question the potential for additional upside. And this is a pretty much global phenomenon, with a substantial number of currencies strengthening against the US dollar. The British pound, for example, pushed through the 127 area to new recovery highs in here today. It is now back above the trend mean, and I think we can conclude that there is a clear evidence of a failed downside break below 120, and subsequently we've seen a robust rebound from the lower side of what is effectively a 3-year trading range, and there is the clear potential for additional upside from here. We also had interesting action in the Japanese yen. There was a very clear upward dynamic in favor of the yen against the dollar. So when we then zoom back out and look at the dollar index, it was in negative territory, and perhaps it's, I think the clearest conclusion is that the majority of the decline in here today was more about the weakness versus the yen versus the euro. And this also continues to look like a medium-term peak, and really a sustained move above the trend mean would be required to question that hypothesis. But I think it's very clear that the sequence of higher reaction lows over the course of the last 2.5 years has been broken, and we are quite likely to see a test of underlying trading. Now, that is positive for gold in US dollar terms, but I think we are seeing a much broader picture here. On the one hand, we continue to see that liquidity remains incredibly, or the liquidity picture looks very robust, with a large number of central banks rolling out successive new measures to lend very significant amounts of money to support economies. Whether that is on the monetary front or the fiscal front, there is no shortage of liquidity, and that is certainly helping to support stock markets. But it is obviously therefore going to also come at the expense of the purchasing power of currencies. So while the dollar is among the weakest, it's also coinciding with the fact that the USA is providing at least half of all global liquidity. And therefore, it is just reasonable that the dollar should be taking some of that pressure. Well, that is helping to support the gold price, and gold has steadied from the lower side of the 2-month range. But what we are also seeing, particularly when we look at, for example, the euro, is that it is steadying from that round 1500 level. When we look at it versus the pound, it had encountered resistance at the 1500 level and has now pulled back to test the region of 1300. But of course, the relative strength of both those currencies is inhibiting the ability of gold to rally against them. Gold does best when it is by far the strongest currency, or the strongest monetary instrument globally. It's not the case today, but it's certainly appreciating, or has the potential to appreciate, against the dollar. We are, however, being presented with reasonably consistent advances in the majority of cases, and this doesn't really look like anything more than a process of mean reversion. Right now, the dollar is the weakest currency out there. It doesn't necessarily mean that other currencies are suddenly very strong, but simply that we're getting a process of mean reversion. The fact that that Christine Lagarde came out today and said that she's willing to work with the German Constitutional Court on the subject of whether quantitative easing is legal or not, from a German perspective at least, is a positive signal that the Europeans are going to continue to provide a large quantity of liquidity and support for the market, and that there's a willingness to explore additional avenues to try and resolve some of the most intransigent problems that Europe has. Now, when we look at how stock markets have been performing, well, we can see that Europe was by and large in negative territory today, but Wall Street was in positive territory. And the Nasdaq came back with a gain of approximately 1% and is pushing on to test that psychological 10,000 level. We're only 99 points away from it in here today. And the pace of the advance has picked up. So we know that there's a short-term overbought condition as it approaches this incredible level of 10,000. A point that a subscriber was making in here today was that it's quite likely that there's going to be a spike in coronavirus cases in the USA about 2 weeks hence because of the rather extraordinary large protest movements that have jumped up in most of the major cities. And that is coinciding with crowded conditions, but it's outdoors. And then he made the very clear point that people do tend to be are more susceptible to contracting respiratory diseases when they're stressed, and certainly people are stressed. But there's a much bigger point to be made here, and it is that what we have seen over the course of the last 6 years has been the rise of populism, and that has been in response to the failure of the measures put in place following the global financial crisis to address some of the most pressing issues for regular consumers. And a significant number of people have experienced a large cut in the standard of living that they enjoyed previously over the last 12 years. India was the first country to adopt a populist government with the success of Narendra Modi in 2014. Well, in that time, the stock market rallied really quite impressively. We have certainly had a significant pullback over the course of the last while, and that is entirely to do with the coronavirus and the exacerbating factor that the banking sector has been in a period of flux following the failure of a number of the non-bank lenders. But the most important point is that most of the upstart populist movements that followed India have been right-wing in nature. That was equally the case in the Philippines, for example, where Duterte has gone through on a law and order platform. Now, that has been particularly violent, and certainly extrajudicial killings have been part of it, but it was at its foundation a law and order mantra. Then we had Brexit, which was more of a protectionist, isolationist, or nativist, or nationalist uprising. Then you had the success of President Trump, and again, that is another example of a right-wing populist coming to power, where they have cut taxes. They run on a platform of championing free speech and law and order. He certainly tried to make a show of being the law and order president over the course of the last month. Well, what we are now. And then, of course, you have Bolsonaro in Brazil as well. And again, a very clear right-wing mantra. All of that has been positive for stock markets. What we are now starting to see is the evolution of left-wing populists. The first and most successful so far has been AMLO in Mexico. Well, he at least did not endeavor to combat the economy, but he has certainly adopted a go-easy set of policies on the drug cartels. So that has certainly been a reversal of a law and order way of thinking. Now, when we look at the success of the Black Lives Matter, and one thing that I find particularly concerning is the prevalence of the silence is violence way of thinking, because it brooks no opposition. And that is one of the hallmarks of a left-wing uprising, censorship. Then you have the, instead of championing law and order, it is castigating law and order. Now, there is absolutely no doubt that the police forces have got a terrible record of brutality, and the evolution of cameras, and cell phone cameras in particular, helps to highlight the fact that a significant proportion of police officers have been lying when they write their reports. So that is an additional problem that they face. But Minneapolis, over the course of the weekend, has passed a bill to outlaw their own police force, and they're completely disbanding the police force. Well, the problem is that when we look at this censorship that's going on, where, for example, the editor of a paper in Philadelphia was said that Buildings Matter Too was fired, well, the reality is that the vast majority of people, their first call when they get into trouble is to the police force. And when crimes transpire and there isn't a police force to call, what are they going to do? Well, it's either that we're going to get a massive surge in crime, or people are going to take the law into their own hands. And obviously that is not an ideal scenario. So, but these are the kinds of patterns that arrives with left-wing populism. And on top of all of that, the two most important are higher taxes and redistribution. Now, that is obviously a threat that is evolving from the perspective of markets. We have not yet seen it reflected in stock markets. The Wall Street indices continue to rally. And I think that is primarily because of the continued flow of the liquidity coming through from both the government and from the central bank. And perhaps also because they don't yet really wish to believe that a very left-wing Democratic Party is about to take over if they in fact win the election. So perhaps the stock market is not willing to believe that that President Trump is in fact going to lose to Joe Biden. So these are obviously going to be some significant issues as we move back up towards the all-time peak. But one thing that we can think about is that it was a point that Ian Little made, I think it was 2 months ago, when he said that there's the potential that the bounce back from the lockdowns is going to be similar to the restoration period following the end of puritanical rule in the UK, which was characterized by opulence and Baroque architecture, where people just went to the other extreme. And following a period where a lot of people have been locked down and unable to leave their houses, I can certainly say that Mrs. Tracy's business is, I can give you the exact figures, just simply based off the last week in Amazon, Her business is up 127% on last month and 25% over last year, over the same week. And that is reflective of a significant jump on the upside in terms of demand for discretionary items in the aftermath of lockdowns ending. It's not like people have stopped shopping online, but they are certainly shopping more. And when I went to the local restaurant row yesterday to pick up some dinner, there was a throng of cars in the parking lot. And we had, I think people were missing the valet parkers. Well, that's obviously I think a clear indication that there is additional support coming through. Now, the most important point is that when we think about government bonds and the risk from inflation, well, we have had an incredible amount of support come through in terms of money printed and spending increased, and that did not create an inflationary outcome for the simple reason that velocity of money was zero. But if economic activity is starting to come back in, and if people are returning back to work, well, then that is likely to contribute to inflationary forces. I think it is increasingly likely that we are going to have some yield curve control coming through from the Federal Reserve, and that will persist for as long as it takes to get economic activity back in action. The one thing that I think is relevant to point out is that the yield curve spread is rising, and it is up now to 65 basis points. And on previous occasions, following an inversion, when the yield curve is spiking higher, it has not been positive for stock markets. So while we are still looking at a stock market that is rallying, and that is as true in Europe as it is in Wall Street, we continue to see a very significant advance in Japan as well, and that was despite the strength of the yen in here today. These are all reasonably consistent advances. Some of them are increasingly overextended in the short term. We will not have evidence, however, that they are over until we get clear downward dynamics. But the first clear downward dynamic is likely to represent a peak of near-term significance. The fact that the yield curve spread is starting to steepen once more, it's steepening because long yields are rising, whereas the short yield isn't. And that is starting to price in the potential for inflation. It's part of the reason why gold continues to be really quite firm. What was also interesting in here today was that platinum was steady and palladium steadied, I think, really quite impressively from the region of the trend mean, up nearly $100. Oil prices were in mildly negative territory in here today, but continue to hold the breakout above the $35 area. Then copper prices were also in positive territory, and they are now above the $2.50 area and pushing through the 200-day moving average. What industrial resources are beginning to price in is reflation on a global basis, and that is likely to be beneficial for all industrial resources. The one clear conclusion is that as we look at the outcome from the massive monetary and fiscal accommodation, is that we are going to have an infrastructure-led recovery, and that there is ample demand for that kind of spending, which is beneficial for all commodities. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.